Well, thank you, Chris, and good morning, church. Good morning. I it's just a blessing to be here. Sometimes I'm not able to attend for whether it's work-related, family-related, or different things going on, but when we're here, it's truly a blessing, and I feel part of the family. I think Chris, with his leadership and his vision, has created something here that's given everybody an opportunity to be a part of this church as a family, and everybody has their role. And I think that plays a significant part of what I'm going to talk about. Most of what Chris said was accurate. However, I didn't realize any of that stuff when I was growing up. You know, you don't know what you don't know. And you move on in life and try and make the best of it. But I thought growing up in the projects was the greatest thing under the sun because there's so many kids and you're playing all the time and having sports programs and things. And back in the 60s, it wasn't like today. Everything wasn't given to you. And people weren't out there trying to save the world. But, you know, you were asked to do specific things. And I'll get more into that as I continue through my talk. But I definitely want to thank Chris and the leadership team for this opportunity. The topic, striving for excellence, is what I called it. I think they called it pursuing excellence, very similar. And it is a pursuit. And it's a pursuit that may or may not come to fruition, or there may be setbacks. And I'll discuss that. But, you know, when I think of excellence in my generation, I think of the landing on the moon. I think of astronauts, and that's why I have them up there. And all the things that had to come into place in order for that to be successful. And it was a one-time shot. Other generations may say the computer or the iPhone. I think we're up to iPhone 10 now, so there were some mistakes along the way. But in that moonshot, in that moon landing, there was a lot at risk. And it was something that was planned for a very long time. People worked diligently to put things in place to create the formula that would get the rocket ship into the orbit of the moon and to be able to land on the moon. So, you know, if those type of standards are put in place in anyone's life, I think you have a great shot of being very successful. And it's the striving for the excellence that's going to get you there. I used to tell my football teams, you need to strive for perfection, but we know we're never going to get there. There's only one man that ever did that. But if we come close, nobody else will know the difference. And that mentality, I think, has driven a lot of what I've done through my life. I had the good fortune of being a teacher, an administrator, a coach in the high school setting, our high school space. And it put me in contact with a lot of kids. And the job of all three of those positions requires to teach, to advocate, to model, to mentor. And you're dealing with a lot of kids, some like Monique, who spoke. She was here in church a few weeks ago, was one of my former students, very proud of. She was a very bright young lady from the seventh grade on that I knew her. And she was one of those I knew was going to make it. She had all the tools, all the skills. But she was in the small percentile. There's a lot of kids in the middle who just don't have those dreams, visions, abilities, or determination to overcome a lot of obstacles that are placed before you. And as a teacher, you engage these kids on a regular basis. Some of you older folks might remember homeroom. Homeroom was a place where students would go on a daily basis in order to take roll for the school. You know, you take role in your classrooms as you go from class to class, but for the school itself and getting the ADA, which is the funding that comes to the school, you take role in homeroom. And you're there for 15, 20 minutes. But it was a group of kids that I was going to have under my care for 3 or 4 years. And so you get to develop those relationships and understand them. And you get the opportunity to motivate them, especially the ones who are struggling. And many stories of kids who overcame a lot of those things, who developed the vision. One thing I used to start when they were ninth graders coming in was I'd say, look at the student next to you on both sides. One of you three will not be here in 4 years, will not graduate. Which one will it be? And from that introduction, I'd go on to talk about different topics of excellence and things that would allow you to achieve. And they would grasp these concepts. One of the things I'm very proud of is that I never had a student drop out of school through three different groups of homeroom students. So that's 12 years of working with kids in that particular setting. And it takes people with that type of understanding. Kids are coming with baggage on a daily basis. You're going to bring the things that you have, whether it's at home, in your environment, or your abilities. And those are the things you have to work with and try and maximize in order to overcome some of those challenges. Let me see if I can move forward. I have about 13 slides. This is one. So I'm going to try and move through them as fast as possible, but give you the understanding of some of the concepts that I based a lot of decisions that I made on. There's a start. I got the bio, and I started telling you I grew up in the projects from the time I was about 3 years old till about 12 years old. I'm the youngest of seven children. My two oldest siblings are 20 and 24 years older than I am, so they weren't in the picture when I was growing up. But the other four were, and there was five of us in single-parent household. My dad wasn't around from the time I was about 2 or 3 years old, and really didn't run into him very often. The story that Chris told, I was actually about 27 years old when that occurred, and hadn't seen my dad in many years. And we were at a family wedding that he attended, and he sat right next to me. I wanted to see if he would say something, so I kept quiet. He didn't say anything the entire time, which that may have been his personality, his way of overlooking failures, but it just spoke to me a lot. That's not the type of person I wanted to be. I went to Cal State LA, graduated from there in 1979, a little while back, became a teacher, worked as a teacher and coach for about 27 years, went back to school in 2003 to get my master's, became an administrator, and then eventually retired from the school district and started working for the CIF and doing what I currently do. A lot of doors were open for me for reasons of changes I made in my life. When I graduated college, I wasn't a Christian. And, I started working as a teacher pretty quickly after graduation, and I had gotten married that summer to my beautiful wife. And we had our struggles, normal struggles everybody goes through, but one of the things I was finding was my attitude, my choices, my judgment, my decisions were more of a hindrance to my success than anything else. I was prepared, I had the knowledge, I had the ability, but things weren't happening the way I thought they would. I was blessed by meeting a gentleman. I remember his first name, Benj, and he was the high school leader over at Brady. And I didn't know anything about Brady back then, but I was coaching at San Gabriel High School right down the street. And he was a track coach, and I was a track coach. And he invited me to a play at Brady. And I came home, and I'm sure my wife was feeling a lot of the same anxieties I was in terms of how things were going in our life and our relationship and those type of things. And so we were very open to it, and we attended. And we started attending very regularly and started growing in the Lord, became Christians, was baptized actually by Chris Crossan at Montebello Park because the baptism was broken. So a lot of great memories, but changed my life, gave me some concepts. I was very diligent about taking notes in service because some of the discussions, some of the topics, some of the verses were so appropriate for what I was doing in my life and working with kids and just giving me direction and understanding of How do you approach certain things? And to this day, I still look for those bits of wisdom, and I will seek them from our leadership, from Dave, from Chris, from Juan, because, you know, we never have all the information we think we have. One thing I tell coaches a lot and administrators that are over athletics is that you're never there. You're always learning. Regardless of what successes you have attained in your life or in your career, you can learn more. You can be better. And when you have that approach, that's that steps toward that excellence. Because sometimes people feel that their personal inputs are more responsible than they actually are for the successes. And it's usually the group that you're working with and the people around you, which is very important. So it's pretty much, I'm married to my wife for 39 years. We have two children, Esteban, 23, and John, my older son, who's 38. And both of them are college graduates. They, you know, I always say we've had two of the greatest kids in the world because minimal issues in terms of as they grew up and what they did. However, both of them were very proud to say they are in the military. Steven just left home last Tuesday. My older son's been in the military since 03, I believe. He's currently a captain in the Army, and Steven's just getting started. So Johnny's married. He has two kids. I have two wonderful, beautiful grandchildren, Logan and we call her Gracie. So Logan and Gracie, and they're just the most beautiful kids ever. Sorry, other grandparents. But so, you know, I believe in everything everyone does. If they're going to do it to the best of their ability and strive for excellence, they have to have that why. Why are you doing this? What's in this for you? And what's that motivation factor? And I list my three motivation factors up there. And it's not something you need to write a long dissertation on, but something that's going to give you an understanding of what's going to continue to push you. I had a job that required me sometimes to be there at 4:30 in the morning and not leave till midnight. And I currently have a job that requires me to, you know, fly out of town for days at a time or be in my office or handle some pretty important issues that can affect a person's life. So it's something I think you have to be grounded in. And I think number one is being a Christian and being grounded in that is really what's going to bring me through in just about everything I do, tough times, good times, and whatever other times may come, and looking to God for those answers. Being a husband is who I am, and my wife's very important to me. And being a father, obviously, you're nurturing, you're modeling, you're teaching, and your kids are going to benefit from the things you do and the things they see on a daily basis. And I've always taken that to heart to bring honor to each one. And, you know, do we fail? Do we slip at times? Yes, we do. And I do. I continue to, not as much as I used to. I think being grounded in the Word and setting the Lord first in all I do and having a daily prayer, I believe gives me some understanding. But, you know, you still have that baggage. It's not as heavy as it used to be, but it's with you. And you have to be able to control that at times. And the support of my wife, I think, is critical in just about everything I've ever done. I know before we even got married, I told her, you know, what I'd like to be someday and what I'm going to shoot for is to be a football coach. That was my big goal. And I'll get more into that topic in a minute. But and she understood. She understood the commitment and the challenge. And part of that commitment came because I was so driven to achieve and the time you put into it, so in the time away from home you are. But I had her support 100% to the point that she would bring the kids to me, not me going to the family. So every game I ever attended or ever been in, she was there, except for one. She went to Mexico City, and I was in a championship event that we didn't plan on being at. But but she would bring the kids, and they would be there. My sons would be at schools nearby, and they'd come to my practice and be with me as soon as school ended. So it was a family affair, and that was the only way that something like this can occur. I look at some of the college coaches, professional coaches, and the amount of time they spend away from their families and the commitment they make. It's a difficult profession to be in, and probably one of the reasons I stepped away from it as well. But so, there's getting on to my topic, there's really four keys that I'm looking at. There's probably more before that I'm going to discuss with you. And they include finding your calling, number one. You know, I was blessed. I loved sports all my life since I was a little kid. Like I said, and living in the projects, there was always somebody to play with. There was always a sports team I was involved with. And so I had that interest. One of the other factors that promoted my interest in pursuing being a football coach was when I played, I saw a lot of things that occurred that weren't beneficial to kids. It wasn't the model that you should be presenting. And they weren't doing things the way that would be healthy for kids to improve themselves. And that was a motivating factor for me as well. And the other thing, I felt I was good at it. I used to tell people, I have no claims in life to anything other than I can call an offense. And, you know, and had one thing I was good at. So I was going to pursue that one thing. A lot of things in front of me that I had to overcome to get to the point where I can be that person. And I'll talk about that in a minute. Creating a vision. You know, you can't get there if you don't know where you're going. And there's a lot of areas where people just sort of get themselves into a position that they have no knowledge of. And it's incredibly important for you to have the knowledge necessary to advance whatever you're doing and the organization you're doing it for. So I'll cover each one of these individually. Application, putting everything into practice. How do you do that? Well, what are the things you got to look at and how do you plan? And then finishing strong, and that's a big one. I mean, I've seen so many kids who are right there at the cusp of success. And all of a sudden, everything else in their life becomes more important. And it flashes by them. And it's no longer an option for them. And it could be drugs. It could be the law. It could be their girlfriend, you know, whatever it might be. But things start happening that they're allowing to happen in their life instead of being understanding of they have things that are more important to them and things that they can make a difference in the lives of many or in our world for that matter. I have the picture up there standing with Leland Melvin. And the reason I put him up there, number one, he's a NASA astronaut, and I think it applied. But Leland's story is what's incredible. He was a gifted athlete, grew up in Virginia, and went to Richmond University on a full scholarship for football, and was a starting athlete there and one of the top defensive backs in the United States. And his senior year, he was drafted by the Philadelphia Eagles, and he was on the travel squad with the Philadelphia Eagles for his rookie season. He did get playing time, and he had a bright future in football, which, as you know, is tremendously lucrative for those that make it and do well. Well, Leland was also a biomechanical engineer and a very bright individual, straight-A student through high school and college, and had opportunities that a lot of people do not. He attended the Nassau Training Center as a college student and eventually applied to be an astronaut through NASA. He went on with doing his thing, and they selected him. And that selection came after his first rookie year with the Philadelphia Eagles. Here's a gentleman, Christian, who had to make a decision. What is more important in my life? Football or being an astronaut doing some of the experiments in space that are going to change mankind? And he chose being an astronaut. And today, I think he's had two trips aboard the space lab and has spent over 100 days in space, which is a tremendous story of character and, you know, somebody who's really pushing themselves to excel at what they do. I put, after every topic, I wanted to give it some connection to Scripture. And I put this one up here, Romans 12, 6 through 8. If a man's gift is prophesying, let him use it in proportion to his faith. If it is serving, let him serve. If it is teaching, let him teach. If it is encouraging, let him encourage. If it is contributing to the needs of others, let him give generously. If it is leadership, let him govern diligently. If it is showing mercy, let him do it cheerfully. I'm attracted to let him use it in proportion to his faith. I think God's telling you that you will be blessed more the more you're faithful to God. And God is going to provide you with those gifts necessary for you to achieve success and strive and pursue excellence in whatever field you choose, in whichever gifts he allows you. And he would give you in abundance. And I experienced that. I look at the list of what he's talking about. Teaching, encouraging, contributing to needs of others. Those are things you do as a teacher, as a coach. You know, I would have a little pocket change in my desk every day. And I would save. In homeroom, we used to pass out the tickets for free food. You know, they have the free lunch that the school districts provide. And I would keep the ones that wouldn't get picked up, somebody's absent, that type of thing. And every day somebody would come to me and either ask for, you know, do you have any tickets or do you have any money for the bus or anything like that. And always trying to provide for their needs. Taking away those excuses that would cause them to fail so they can continue to challenge themselves. The context of this verse, I believe, has to do with being a member of a group or the body, as in church. Everybody here has provided those gifts. Everybody here has something special about them. And you are a part of the whole, just like your body has parts. And Chris can attest to being without one of those parts. It becomes more difficult. The more we as a group of congregation can put our talents, our skills, our gifts to the needs of this church, the greater accomplishments and excellence we'll achieve as a church. And that's what I took from that. I give that picture up there. How many people have been hiking up at high altitudes? Any high altitude hiking? Anybody? Yes. And how far do you get before you have to stop and catch your breath? You know, I was up in up by Mono Creek. I don't know if you know our Mono Lake. It's up on the eastern side of the Sierras up by Bishop. And we're up about 10, 12,000 foot elevation. I could not walk from here to Chris without stopping and trying to catch my breath. It's very challenging. And because it's challenging, you need that motivating factor of the other ones you're with. Come on, we can make it. We can get from here to that next pole or whatever it might be. And so you always need those people who are going to help motivate you, who are around you. Finding your calling. And it's pursuing your passions. What do you like doing? You might have multiple things, but something's going to pop up that's even a little bit better than the other things. And you never know how things are going to change in your life as the days go through. I wasn't even aware that there was such a thing as a CIF commissioner when I was going to college. So it's not what I planned to become. So doors will open and you'll find your calling as you go through. But find your calling and your gifts right now and your talents. And the reason for that is, you know, when I was working, and I tell you, I spent a lot of hours and doing things, it didn't seem like I was going to work. It was going to do something I enjoyed doing. And so I never felt the day in my life that I was getting up in the morning going to work. I was going to do what I enjoy doing. And I can't think of anything better for anyone, whether it's, you know, if you're a legal person, a medical person, work with numbers, whatever it might be. If that is your calling and that is your passion, that's the direction of some way you should go in. Today, obviously, I'm not coaching, but I oversee 155 school athletic programs. I work with the athletic directors, all the coaches, all the various sports, and set up all the playoffs, championships, the league assignments, and list goes on and on. I deal with some other issues that are a little bit more legal, and other issues that have to do with the funding coming into our nonprofit organization. But for the most part, our purpose is to provide athletic opportunities for students in high school. And one of my charge is to create those opportunities some way, some form. And we've done numerous things. My why is to expand my connection, expand my area of reference, and to give those opportunities to children. Starting off as a coach, I affect the kids on my team. Moving on to an athletic director, I affect the kids in my school. Moving on to a district administrator, I affected the kids in Los Angeles Unified School District that played sports. Moving on to the CIF commissioner, I affect everybody in the Los Angeles area that plays sports. And basically have a say at the table for the state and what we do statewide and what we do as a section within Los Angeles for the types of sports we offer, the divisions, the number of divisions, the number of playoffs, the number of championships, the number of schools involved, and all those type of things. So it's a blessing that comes with a lot of pressures from a lot of different areas, but one that I think with God's guidance and God's assurances of my gifts, I'm able to withstand. But it was a long road. Doors opened up because of successes sometimes. When I went to college, I was amazed. I graduated high school, and guys, close your ears back there, with a 1.4 GPA. I did not apply myself. Unfortunately, at the time, 2.0 GPA was not required. And I was able to, as long as I was passing classes, they said I can play. Okay, we're good. I didn't have the understanding of setting goals for beyond, of knowing that tomorrow is coming and preparing for it. I think today we do a better job as educators providing that message to a lot of students. But back then, it wasn't really one of the things that was on my radar, so to speak. And I graduated, went to the military, came back, said, okay, I'm going to college. I want to be a football coach. And to be a football coach at that time, you had to be a teacher. Today it's a little different, but at that time it was had to do it. So I got to get my degree, not only an AA, but a BA. So I started off at East LA College, and I was taking classes, and I'll be honest, my first semester, I took 5 classes and failed every single one of them. I had no idea what I was doing or how to do it. I didn't know how to be a student. I didn't know how to study. I don't think I've ever been in the library, to tell the truth. And I can be honest about, I never read a book from cover to cover prior to that year. You know, and that's not a brag. It's basically what I experienced. How do you overcome that type of setback? When your only goal and your only plan, I want to be a football coach. So what I did have going for me, I was stubborn. I was determined. I was invested. And I only had one plan. So I took every one of those same teachers, second time, the next semester, every one of those classes, and started talking to a lot of people about, okay, what do I got to do here? How do you use the library? How do you study? How do you spend time, and how do you retain this? And what do I need to retain? So I became aware of a lot more things that prepared me, and now I was passing classes. That first year, some C's, couple B's, and then it went on to B's and a couple A's, and then it went to straight A's. By the time I graduated, I was a straight A student. And in my master's program, I was a straight A student. So there's a learning curve there when you don't apply yourself. But I was one of many, many, many that didn't make it. And so it's not the best route to go, but there is an opportunity for everybody, and if they're willing to apply themselves and work. I failed to mention that when I started working, I was 8 years old. I living in the projects, we didn't have a lot of money. So if I wanted some extra things, I had to go do something to earn that, to pay for it. And I started off as a paper boy. I was on a corner holding papers, and cars drive by, and you walk out in the street and sell them a newspaper for a dime. And then I expanded that into two paper routes and making a little bit more money. And then I started shining shoes, going downtown on weekends and being a shoe shine boy and charging 25 cents to shine somebody's shoes. The moral of that story is that I wasn't afraid to work, whatever they put in front of me. And I kept that mentality to today. If it calls for getting up at a certain time and being there and making sure that something gets done, I'm there. If it calls for, you know, creating the ideas for how we're going to do certain things, I'm there. But that is one of the things that carried me through the difficult times when I had to overcome some of the challenges in college. Picture. And the picture I have there is obviously a championship team where I was blessed to have had three of them, been in five championship games, and that's in the sport of football, and coached with a soccer team here at San Gabriel High School and won two soccer championships in Southern Section. Had a lot of tremendous success. A lot of it attributed to those kids that played for me and believed in a lot of things that I would be telling them, and was able to get them to unite as one and play as one. But those successes really were driven by the passion I had for what I was doing and the ability to communicate and develop the relationships with the players I was working with. Corinthians 1:10-31. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. We can't leave God out of the equation. Everything that happened there, even though I wasn't a Christian yet, I know God was helping me through these struggles and giving me the right perspective. Because at any time I easily could have went a different direction for a lot of different reasons. And I'll give you one. I came out of the service. I had worked at UPS. Julian, you're not here? Okay, good. I worked at UPS, and I was going to college, too. And that was another part of the problem, you know, not being able to manage my time well enough. And so working at UPS, it's an afternoon job from 4 to 8 o'clock, except when you get to certain key parts of the year when there's a lot of packages, you might work 4 to 12 o'clock. And, you know, there came a time where I was being offered promotions. And now I'm into my junior year of college, and I'm saying, that's a full-time job there. If I take that job, money's very good at that time. What are my chances of becoming that football coach I wanted to be? Probably slim and none. And so I quit. I just quit the job and became a full-time student and focused my efforts on college, which allowed me to do even better. It also allowed me to finish sooner. So I thought it was the best move I could make for my life, knowing that once I completed my education and hopefully got a job teaching, I was probably going to make half as much as they would have paid me at UPS. But in the long term, I think it was a wise decision because of, as time went on, you pass up the opportunities that were provided at UPS with the opportunities provided in the school district. So it was a good thing for me. The picture I have up there is my son, John, who is leading his battalion that had just returned from Afghanistan. And they were there for a year. And I put it there because the motto of the military is God and country. They place God first. And they put a big emphasis on making sure that your morals and understanding. And I was just reading my younger son's, they give him a lot of orientation paperwork and stuff. And one of the things is talks about their behaviors and their morals and their, you know, what they're doing in public and things of that nature. And God gives you those understandings of how you should behave and model his life. Developing a vision. The next theme. Placing God number one. And if you're not doing that, at some point in time, you're going to fail without a understanding for how to recover. God's going to give you those opportunities. It might not be in your timeline, but it will be in God's timeline. I was an assistant football coach for 17 years and loved every minute of it. But more importantly, it prepared me for what was to come. As a head coach, you're responsible for so many things. There's no way you can have an understanding for it until you've done it. But the more you've been an assistant coach and the more positions you have coached and both sides of the ball or special teams, whatever it might be, the more understanding you have for how to coordinate that whole thing and work with 12 to 15 other men to coordinate them so that everybody's on the same page on a daily basis in practice and coordinating a practice and breaking it down into 4-minute segments or 3-minute segments so that everybody knows what they're doing. Those are things that require expertise, and time is what allows you to have that knowledge. Today, what I see in a lot of younger employees is that they look for the immediate success and immediate growth and rise within the company. And to me, that's a detriment on their part because they haven't learned all the finer skills, all the nuances of the business, and how to work through problems. And so when they get themselves put in that leadership position, they're setting themselves up for failure if they're not prepared for it. So time working towards something is a positive. It's not a negative to stay back. I use a term called give ground to gain ground. It's a football term. It has to do with footwork on a line, offensive lineman. In that if they step back, they're giving ground to the defensive player that's coming across the line. But it's also giving separation. So now on my next step, I can get position on this person to block them appropriately. And it's a tactic that I use, or term I use, in just about everything I do. When I have to allow or give somebody else the opportunity to step ahead, or I have to step myself back so that I'm not taking the lead on something, but somebody else is. But in the long run, I'm going to learn something that's going to advance me so that eventually I have the skills and understanding and know-how to move forward and advance myself further. So it's complex. There's a lot of people that don't understand it. There's a lot of people who are too in a hurry to get there. And if you're too in a hurry, you're going to get there too soon. Setting goals every day, every month, every year, but more importantly, assessing the progress. You may have to give ground to gain ground. But goals are critical. It gives you that vision of where you're going. It gives you that understanding. Just about everything I do, there's something put on my plate. On a daily basis, first thing I do when I sit down at my desk is write up what I got to get done today. I have a calendar next to me that's a month calendar. I have a year-long plan that tells me where we're going each year. We're planned at least a year in advance of everything we're doing. So there's no questions. Yes, there are adjustments, revisions, that type of thing, but there's a lot of things that can come into play that will create that need. But for the most part, we have direction, and we know exactly what we're doing. Annually, we reassess and reestablish. In that way, I'm not just cookie-cutting everything. We're talking about it, what worked, what didn't work, why it didn't work, and what do we need to do to fix it. So, designing a career plan, plan A and plan B. I've already explained why. You got one plan, you fail, it's over. But I learned that more as a football coach. You don't go into a game with one plan. You have to have different designs, because if the other team, if they're a quality team, they've scouted you, they know what you're doing, if they're able to stop you, you better have something else going. It's even advanced further than that. You know, everybody here watches football on television, and I know half of you are experts at it because I hear you in the stands when I used to coach. But the reality is, on every play, there's at least three plays called. And it might be two runs and one pass, two passes, one run. And it's predicated on the defense, the alignment, and being able to recognize what they're going to do and where pressures are coming from, if pressures are coming. So I learned from that, you know, in life, and I would teach my players, design a plan. I would have them write down their goals and their plans and post it in their locker. So when they open their locker every day, they saw those goals. They saw those plans. And every day they would work to accomplish that. And it's a daily effort to strive for excellence. You have to show up in those terms every day in practice, every play, every rep. In the game, every single play. And not only show up, but what is your goal? What's your goal on 1st and 10? And you're the offensive guard. What's your goal on 2nd and long? And you're the quarterback. You know, simple things like that. And that comes to the coach to teach those goals. And they're pretty simple, really. But if they have an understanding of what they're trying to accomplish, their chances of accomplishing it are much greater. Seeking role models. And, you know, not only role models, but mentors. Somebody you trust, somebody you strive to copy, somebody who is doing something you would like to do someday, somebody that you think does it at a very high level. I had some role models through my career in coaching. Pete Carroll, somebody I can call a friend. Used to talk to him on a regular basis, and he gave me a lot of insights about career in football and being a football coach, and whether at the next level or the pro level and those type of things. And it's a whole different environment than what most people think. And one would have to really think long and hard if they wanted to pursue something like that. And I felt I was in the right space for who I was and what I was. But in my career now, I've had other mentors, some principals in my past career, some superintendents who I had good relationships with, and those gave me directions. And currently, there are a couple of commissioners that are just incredible at what they do, and I speak with them on a weekly basis and just talk about issues that are coming up. So again, you're never there. You're never finished. Nothing too big, nothing too small. And I've always had that motto coming from where I come from. The example I can give, I was a dean of students at Roosevelt High School in 1986. And I had a parent come in whose son was in problems. And the parent was having some problems of his own and shared with me he's looking for a job. But the jobs that are available are, you know, not good enough for him. And I'm of the mind, I'm going to put food on the table. It's not a matter of what I'm doing. It's a matter of having the funds to do it with. And so I shared with him that I said, you know, I really don't have much sympathy for you. If there are jobs there to take and you're refusing to take it, I'm sorry, I can't relate to that. After I leave this job at 3 o'clock, I go to Dodger Stadium so I can make hot dogs. Nothing too big, nothing's too small. Got a picture of the group there. These are all battalion commanders, with the tall guy in the middle is the general. And it was a meeting they had at in Afghanistan. What's the capital? Kabul. And my son is right behind the general there on, I guess it'd be the right-hand side? Yeah, right-hand side of the screen. And the reason I put it there, there is no one, from my experience in seeing what my son does, any better capable of setting a vision, of setting a plan, and of putting that plan together. They call it a mission. My son now owns a few coffee shops, which, you know, I talked about, never know where direction you're going to go and what's going to happen. Well, he majored in history at Washington State and has his education administration degree, master's degree from USC. And he was working at UCLA in their athletics department. And all of a sudden, he decided he was going to open a coffee shop. And that coffee shop has grown into 4 coffee shops now. And when I speak with him about his organizational structure, his plans, his vision for what things should be, I am blown away. You know, and that's what I do for a living. But he just is 10 steps beyond me. And I attribute a lot of it to the training that they receive in the Army, because his first 5-6 years in the Army were just all training, all over the world. And he couldn't tell me where he was going because he'd have to kill me, but that's another story. So I put that there because it just reminds me that you want to strive for excellence. These guys, I learned last Tuesday, I attended my son's swearing in. 1% of United States citizens join the military. 1%. And those are the ones that keep us free, give us the opportunity to be here in church every day, speak our minds, see what we see on television about our Senate and Congress, to do all those things. These guys are heroes to me. And I wish there were more people that were willing to put their lives on the line for others as much as they are. But what I tell people, you know, they'll ask, you know, how do you feel about 2 sons being in the military? I said, you know, when I know that we have some of our finest men serving to protect us, I am proud of them. So, my son was assigned to a FOB. It was pretty far south of Kabul, but his job was with a transportation unit that would bring the supplies to all the forward FOBs, and they would have to travel. Sometimes they're taking vehicles, sometimes they're taking supplies, equipment, ammunition, whatever it might be. The problem was that they're traveling through hostile territories, and those IUDs, explosives, on the trucks was probably the greatest challenge they had. My son was awarded the Bronze Star for being creative enough to design a program that allowed for that became actually the policy for the military to minimize the risk of being caught in one of those IUD explosives. And what it was the way he termed it was, "Dad, it's like driving through East LA. You just go as fast as you can." So there's some merit to that. So. Philippians, and we're almost there. What time you got, Dave? Oh, okay. Philippians 4:8-9. "Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. You know, it's finding God's will, and it's amazing I came across this scripture in that it pretty much puts it in a nutshell. You know, when you can take the examples of Jesus Christ, if you can take the Word of God and put it into practice, He's going to be with you. You're not alone. And that is what's going to allow you to achieve higher than expected. In my college, my master's program, I was 51 years old when I got my master's. And I think there's three people that were older than me. So I was one of the older folks there. And we would meet twice a week from 4 o'clock till 10 o'clock. And then on Saturdays with your study groups. And my study group was like 7 women. Sorry, babe. And they were all younger teachers. And there was a lot of teachers from middle schools, elementary schools, and probably about 20% of the class was high schools. And I was the only football guy. So, but I earned, and I say earned because they used to call me it, overachiever. I had learned from these scriptures, from the disciplines that I had with what I did, to not procrastinate, but to get on to things and get them done so you have more time to review it and check it, to make sure that it's accurate in what you mean and that you've learned. You've had opportunity to review it 2 and 3 times. You know, when I finally learned how to be a student when I was an undergrad, I used to fall asleep on my books because I wasn't used to reading that much. But I would wake up and keep reading. And sometimes that's what it takes. And be able to own it as if I was the expert. I'm the teacher. And that's what I wanted to take with me. I was so discouraged my second year in college when I took a class. And it was an elective of astronomy. I knew nothing about astronomy. But it's pretty difficult at that time for me. It was pretty difficult. There was a lot of reading, a lot of understanding of concepts I wasn't familiar with. So it came time for a test. And there was a lot of bright people in there. My thing was, I want to know this stuff so I can teach it someday. I want to be the expert. And so the test goes around, and at that time, not a lot of people had tattoos. But you would think that their whole arm was a tattoo with everything they wrote down so that they can look at their cheat sheets here. And I'm going, really? Is that what it takes? And I didn't subscribe to that, and I never would, because I felt it only cheats yourself. Because you lack the knowledge. You're spending all this time with today's world, all this money, on trying to gain information and knowledge to prepare you for what you want to do for life in your chosen field. And you want to walk away with half the information. It just does not make sense to me. And that's a message I try and teach my students. Do the best you can to excel at everything you do. And if you fall a little bit short, you're still far beyond most. Well, let me go back. The picture there, that's me and my lovely wife. And we're at Ground Zero in New York. And the only reason I put that there is because I love seeing it with my wife and I. Application, and this is the last one. Prepare for opportunity, be the expert in what I was just talking about, and you will be blessed because you will be at the top of your game. You know, every week you have a game in football during the football season, and every week we would talk about the same thing, that Friday is the game. Not Monday, not Tuesday, not Wednesday, not Thursday, Friday. That's when you need to be at your best. So it's when you get there, you need to be at your best. and you need to be doing the things that you've prepared for, and be able to do them naturally. It's, if I had to think about what the assignment was on any given play, it's too late. You need to be ahead of that. It needs to be automatic instinct, muscle memory, all those different things that are going to allow you to execute. And it's execution. Is it easy? No. There has to be commitment there. But be the expert. Work hard, give the effort as much as you can. You know, today, there's a lot of people that suffer from all these stress-related illnesses and things. I never had that. I never experienced it. I was always too motivated to move and move and move. And I think because I was that way, I never saw it in any of the players I ever dealt with. They were able to stay with us. I would present things in a way that we actually learned them four times within a year. So we went through cycles, and between each cycle there was a rest period built in so that we can recover our bodies, recover our minds, and then get at it again. Sometimes we would do active rest, find other things to do. We'd play basketball. We'd just have fun games. But the other thing I would do is make things fun for them. Today in my office, you know, we try and go out to eat every other week or have some type of event for our office staff so that we keep that focus of what we're doing. It can't be push, push, push all the time. That's when you run into those stress issues. So build those into your plans. But you need to compete. And that's what I used to teach my athletes. You have to compete. I used to love kids that played multiple sports because it gives them a chance to continue competing for what they're doing. But everything in life is competition. Your classroom is competition. I would sit, having the experience I had of failing every class and when I started out. After that, when I get in the classroom, I'd look around. Who's that guy or that girl that's the competition, that's going to get the best grades in this class? That's the one I'm going after. That's the one I want to keep up with. That's the one that's going to make me the best I can be. And I would tell my players that, whether it's in their classroom, on the street, in the game, it didn't matter. We weren't going to give an inch, and we weren't going to show any defeat because we were going to compete every single down. Challenge yourself to be better. Seek the knowledge. Success is a byproduct of what you do. It's not the finish line. It comes with everything you've done that year. And if you've done everything you needed to do, you're going to be successful. How successful is up to you. But success will come with the efforts placed. Trust in God. I was listening to Denzel Washington. I don't know how many of you heard his speech that he gave at, it was a Christian university. Incredible. As bold can be. Put God first in everything you do. I don't know if I should talk about this, but you're going to have failures. That's what he said to a graduating class. How do you overcome those failures? Through God. Put him in your life and follow his will. And then you can enjoy the journey, because it is a journey. It's not just getting to a point because of it's going to happen by itself. You got to work at it. And there's going to be a lot of trials, tribulations. There's going to be a lot of ups and downs. And it's how do you deal with those? How many people have seen that the Supreme Court justice, what is it called? The hearings, the Senate hearings. Oh, that first day was something else. But there's a man that's putting trust in God because he's being put through a grinder. And he has come away with just this incredible dignity that has to be inspiring to everybody, including the Democrats. But no offense, Democrats. But but it's incredible. But the way I think and what's important is that he's authentic. It's him. That's the way he is. He's not trying to be pretentious. He's not trying to give them an answer that he thinks they want to hear or that type of thing. And he's able to function outside his comfort zone. And we all have that. And that's an issue. One of the things, I've traveled around in terms of my career and had various jobs. And my first job was actually a pretty good job. I could have stood there forever and been very happy. But these other doors opened up, and now you got to weigh the issue. And one of those issues is, you know, can I take myself and put into a foreign environment and still obtain that same success? My answer is yes. And if it's the right situation for me and my family, I do not hesitate. But you find a lot of people who have been in a job for 40 years and probably retired 20 years ago. And it's because they got comfortable. There is no competitiveness. There's no growth. There's no stimulation. You know, and ask yourself every now and then, what have I done for this company? What have I done in this job lately? And if the answer is nothing, you need to start looking at movement or doing something. David Canales is the gentleman in the picture up there. David was a student of mine at Carson High School. He was a quarterback, very intelligent young man, 4.2 GPA. Was not the valedictorian because he was not in the leadership class because he was an athlete, and it happened during the same period. So, and he understood that. Him and his brothers experienced the same thing. He has two other brothers, and two of them played for me. David wanted to be a football coach. Came back to Carson High School after I had stopped coaching, and I was the dean. I was working on my master's at the time, and would periodically come into the office seeking mentorship, seeking a role model. And we'd talk football. We'd talk about careers. And one day I asked him, I said, David, ultimately, where do you want to end up? He goes, I want to be a college coach. And that sounded like me 20 years before that. And I said, if you want to be a college coach, you need to leave this job, go find a college coach that is willing to take you in and mentor you, and do what you need to do to get started on that career. Because the longer you stay in high school, the more you'll become a high school coach and not have those opportunities. So, great kid, very intelligent, like I say, and very likable. And he went over to a couple of different schools, Cal Berkeley, and gave him a couple of references. He went over to USC, spoke with Pete Carroll. And Pete Carroll brought him on as a summer clinic or camp worker. After the summer camp was over, he liked him so much, brought him on as a grad assistant, which sort of the gophers for the coaches, they help the coaches, that type of thing. But it's a full-time job. And that was Pete Carroll's last year at USC. He got hired as the head coach at the Seattle Seahawks, and one of the young men he brought with him was David to work with the Seattle Seahawks. David's first year, actually first 3 years, he was what's called operation control. Sort of like the grad assistant in college, but you do it in the pros. You help and work with a position. Well, he worked with the quarterbacks, Wilson. And he was actually assigned to be his right-hand guy and work with him on basically all skills in and out of season. You remember the Super Bowl where the Seattle Seahawks threw that pass in the end zone and dropped it, got intercepted. They could have won the game right there. They're on the 2-yard line. Everybody says they should have gave it to the running back, run it in. Well, the coach that was the receiver coach at that time had the wrong groups in the game. And that's why the guy who ran that route didn't run the route right. And he ended up getting fired. David has been the receiver coach now since then, and that's been about 3 years now. So he's the receiver coach on a professional team, living his dream because he sought mentors. He was willing to spend the time. And he learned his job. and it pays off. And he's a godly man. His father, Pastor Canales, has a church in Carson, Ebenezer Christian Church, has about 3,000 membership. His two brothers are also pastors at the church. Very, very strong family. His father used to be my pastor, team pastor, when I was at Carson High School. And I don't know about this, you can't pray in high school because we prayed every day, but that's not the... Whoops. I missed a couple of them. Okay. So this, yes. Yes, that was one of the brothers. Yeah. Galatians 6:9, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. That's what I was talking about when sometimes people create their own demise and failure, is that they give up before they reach their goal. Sometimes that journey is a lot longer than you think, and you have to maintain that enthusiasm and that desire to achieve. And it comes God's timing, not your timing. So, you know, if I would have been a head football coach within a couple of years after I graduated college, I probably would have been out of coaching a couple of years after that. But I took the time and I was patient about it. And I think that paid off in God's eyes. Timing has a lot to do with it. I don't know, how many people have been fishing here? Any fishermen in the crowd? Me and Dave took a trip, you'll see that picture next. But, you know, you go out, you spend the entire day out there. You're on a boat, we're out in Alaska, you go out for about 3 hours, and then you stop and you're fishing, trolling, all that stuff, and then you find locations to... The limit on catching halibut per day is 2. So you're out there for 10 hours to catch 2 fish. They're pretty big fish, but it is an exercise in patience. And because they don't come, you know, you think they're going to come up right away. No, and those guys, they're smarter than us, really. But it's a great, great time, great experience. Sometimes it can get pretty crazy, the weather, and you sort of have those struggles of how you're doing things. But... It was a great experience. But that's the patience you need. There's finishing strong and perseverance, sustaining good and bad times. You know, they're going to come. We're reading a book right now in the book club. Setbacks be your comebacks. And setbacks could be failures. Could be anything that's delaying your success, and how to deal with that. But you have to anticipate that those things are going to happen. Number one, so you're already aware of it, and know how to deal with it, and know how to turn it into positives. You know, they give examples of Einstein and developing the light bulb, and you know he tried like 10,000 times before he actually did it the first time. So those are the patience you have to have, and also the positive approach. Abraham Lincoln's another one of the greatest presidents ever in the history of this country, dealing with some of the more serious issues in the history of this country. Had lost elections like 20 times before he was elected to Congress. It was an afterthought to become president when he did become president, because he wasn't one of the top runners for the office. So... those were people who knew how to deal with it and keep the right approach. Give ground to gain ground. There's my quote. And sometimes it takes that. Take a step back and take a lesser position. Learn more. Develop more. Prove yourself. Those type of things. And let others lead. Relationships. Critical, critical, critical. Understand that you will always be confronted with people who either like you or don't like you. Either have courtesies or don't have courtesies. And how are you going to respond to that? How are you going to respond to your successes or your failures? You know, in a humble, dignified way, or you're going to start making accusations and blaming everybody else. You know, the buck stops here. I've talked to principals at high schools that don't understand that concept. You know, I will chase the teacher that does wrong after they do wrong. Well, how about prevent it? How about get ahead of it? How about design a plan, a culture of success? And that way you won't have those experiences. It is who you are, not what you are. And that pride and boastfulness is when you attain a certain amount of success is very difficult. You see it in a lot of professional athletes, performers, maybe even in some politicians. But it's not about them. It is not about you. It's about what you're doing. Be a blessing to others. Critical, critical, critical. You will attain that success someday. Now, what are you going to do with it? How are you going to help others? Are you going to be one to reach back and offer your support and give them the same opportunities you had? And that's something that I deal with now. I'm at the end of my career, and I'm looking to advance those who either are in a position of need or in a position to advance themselves. And I take pride in that. Making a difference in what you do, how you do it, and sometimes that takes years. You might be the person to find the cure for cancer. That's not going to happen overnight. That might be a lifelong endeavor. And, you know, but if that's your calling and that's your passion, that's what you stick with. I was talking with a doctor the other day. He's 81 years old. He's still working and he's still volunteering time and doing some other things in these lab studies. And, you know, he goes, John, I can't stop. This is what I love. And I understand it. I understand it. And hopefully you will understand that as well. Looking back and giving back, there's a country song that basically states that. And that, to me, is the ultimate. When you give back, you've made it. You reach that excellence that you strived for. Okay, last one, Philippians 2, 12 to 15. Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose. Do everything without complaining or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure, children of God without fault in a crooked and deprived generation in which you shine like stars in the universe. You know, I used to, I think I told you, if you shoot for the stars and you don't reach them, you're still very successful in whatever you're doing. And my words to you is shoot for the stars. I put that picture there because everything's not as comfortable as they may appear. You know, I mentioned I have to travel sometimes out of town, and this is one of those times. I was in Indianapolis. I think the temperature was like 9 degrees, and I'm at a conference there, and I stepped outside. I took my hood off so that I can take the picture, but it wasn't a comfortable feeling. It's not a comfortable feeling to be away from your family. It's not a comfortable feeling to be in an environment like this. But those are some of the things you have to sacrifice when you're striving for excellence and you're striving to build something that wasn't there before. So my encouragement to you is to take this on without the complaining argument, to allow yourself to do the best you can and be that model for others. And closing. One of the things I used to tell the players the very end of Thursday's practice, and that's the last practice of the week. The next day you're going to play the game. And you know, I always appreciated the efforts that a team would give and the sacrifices they would make all week long and get in the game and give as much as they possibly can. and try and keep things as safe as possible. But our last thing that we would say in our practice was, dream big and tomorrow we'll live it. Well, I put up there, dream big, because if you work hard, you will get there. Rest is important, but without the hard work, it's meaningless. So make sure you plan accordingly. I heard this quote, I think it was on the radio just the other day, and it says, today is but one day of the many days ahead. What you do today will affect each of the days to come. Remember that so that your setbacks will be fewer when you use the correct and proper judgment and decision making so that you can advance yourself and ultimately reach your goals. Thank you very much. Let me close in prayer and bring up Matt. Bow your heads. Father God, Lord, I'm just so thankful for you to allow me this opportunity to come up here and share some thoughts, Father, of your word and of direction for some of our youth in the church, Father, that hopefully this may have blessed one or more so that they may approach their life and their struggles with a more positive attitude and with an understanding of their plan of achieving excellence, Father. And Father, I lift this time up and ask for your blessing on each and every one here, that they may be at least helped or enlightened by anything I may have said today, Father. And I thank you. It's in Jesus' holy name I pray. Amen.